Welcome to the PwC podcast. We are embarking on a deep dive today into one of the most enduring questions that followers of Christ have grappled with for two millennia.
Mm-hmm.
Are we living in the final days before Christ's return?
It's a question that, you know, so often fuels alarmism and sensationalism instead of just grounding us in hope.
Right.
But our source material today, Matthew 24, specifically the first 14 verses, it gives us the perfect antidote to all that fear. Jesus wasn't trying to hand us a specific date.
No secret code.
Not at all.
Okay, so let's unpack this. He was providing his followers with a kind of practical framework for how to view world events and really how to sustain their faith during difficult times.
Exactly.
So our mission in this deep dive is to pull out those key teachings, not just, you know, listing signs, but understanding how to be steady, alert, and fundamentally hopeful no matter what's going on.
That structure is so important. We have to start with the shocking event that triggered this whole conversation, which was Jesus's prophecy about the temple. Then we'll get into what he calls the birth pains, these general signs that happened before the end. And then we can focus on the real challenge and the great promise, how God's mission moves forward even when pressure is increasing.
So let's start with that scene. It's so vivid. Jesus and his disciples are walking away from the temple in Jerusalem. Now, you have to try and picture this structure.
It's hard to even imagine.
It wasn't just a building. It was, I mean, maybe the most impressive piece of architecture in the ancient world.
Yeah.
It represented everything. The center of God's presence on earth, the stability of their nation.
Their entire faith system right there in stone. The disciples were basically bragging about it, you know, pointing out these magnificent stones, the incredible construction.
And their pride was totally warranted.
Yeah.
Herod the Great had poured decades of work into it. Some of these stones were just massive, an engineering marvel. They saw permanence. They saw glory.
And then Jesus just delivers this ultimate cultural and religious shockwave.
He completely shifts the ground under their feet. He looks at it and tells them, and this is the trigger for the whole chapter, that a time is coming when that entire thing would be utterly leveled. He says, not one stone will be left upon another.
For a first century Jew, that's earth-shattering. If the temple, the place where God dwelled, could be destroyed, then their whole world was ending.
So that leads them to pull him aside privately on the Mount of Olives, and they ask him three big connected questions.
Right. First, when will this temple destruction happen?
Okay.
Second, what's going to be the sign of your coming? And third, what will signal the end of the age?
And it's so critical to remember he's answering these with a kind of dual perspective, right?
Yeah.
Part of what he describes was fulfilled in history.
Absolutely. The destruction of the temple happened tragically in 70 AD by the Romans. But the rest of his answer, it stretches far beyond that single event. It describes the signs that continue until he returns.
So when Jesus responds, he starts with these general signs. The things that will happen during this whole period between his ascension and his return. He's setting expectations.
And he's so clear about this. These signs are not the end itself.
And what's the very first warning he gives? It's not about war.
Yeah.
It's not about earthquakes.
No, it's about deception.
Yeah.
He says, watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name claiming I am the Messiah.
That immediately anchors the whole conversation in spiritual alertness.
It has to. Jesus knew that in times of stress and uncertainty, people are so susceptible to false promises, to quick fixes. False Christs and false prophets, they thrive when hope is low.
So the first priority for any believer is to be grounded in the truth. Otherwise, you'll be misled.
Then he lists the other things, the environmental, the geopolitical signs that we all recognize, wars and rumors of wars.
Nations rising against nations, kingdoms against kingdoms, famines, earthquakes. I mean, you look at the global news today, and it is so tempting to just throw your hands up and say, this is it.
But this is where Jesus gives us that crucial piece of context, that metaphor.
The birth pains.
Exactly. He says, all these are the beginning of birth pains.
And a birth pain, I mean, it's intense, it's uncomfortable, but it signals life, not death. It means a process has started and a delivery is coming.
And what's the dynamic we need to see? In childbirth, the contractions, they increase in frequency and intensity the closer you get.
Right.
So Jesus is saying that this global instability, the wars, the disasters, the turmoil, it's meant to keep us awake. It's preparing us. If these signs have been happening for 2,000 years, how do we know we're getting closer?
Well, it seems like the intensity, the global scope of it all is ratcheting up. The whole world is dealing with these things all at once now.
But the key takeaway is still this. Just because you hear of a war or an earthquake, you don't panic. He says it so explicitly right after that list. See that you are not alarmed.
For this must take place, But the end is not yet. Our job isn't to predict the headlines.
It's to maintain a faith anchored in Christ's sovereignty, knowing he told us this chaos was coming. These are general signs for the world. But then he shifts. He starts talking about something else.
He shifts from talking about nations to talking about us.
His followers.
And that's a challenging transition. We've talked about the global volatility, these birth pains. But when you start to really internalize these truths, you realize the world is going to feel more and more chaotic. It's easy to feel, you know, overwhelmed.
Or isolated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why being anchored in a strong believing community is just. It's non-negotiable for endurance.
It really is. Isolation is what the enemy preys on.
Speaking of community and endurance, we encourage you to visit us at pwc.pittsfordwesleyanchurch. We are focused on navigating these truths together, grounded in hope and solid biblical teaching. You can find out more by searching PWC Pittsford Wesleyan Church online. So let's pivot now and look at that second set of warnings Jesus gave, the pressures that are targeted directly at the church.
This is where he shifts the focus entirely. He warns that when these birth pains get more intense, his followers will actually be seized, persecuted, some even put to death. The world will hate believers on account of my name. That's the external test.
But this is where the warning hits hardest for me. The pressure isn't just from the outside, from governments or hostile groups. Jesus warns about internal decay.
Yes.
This is where it gets really challenging for us today. He says that many, many people inside the community will fall away. They'll betray one another, despise those who are trying to stand firm.
And that internal betrayal, that disillusionment, it's a huge stumbling block. And look at the result he points to. False prophets will rise up. They'll deceive multitudes. And this is the line. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold.
That phrase, the love of most will grow cold. It just perfectly summarizes the spiritual epidemic of the last days, doesn't it?
It does.
It's not always this huge theological collapse. It's a gradual cooling.
Yeah.
It's apathy. It's cynicism toward other believers, a refusal to forgive, just getting too comfortable with the world around us.
It's the slow, fatal drift. The external pressures of persecution, the internal pressure of betrayal, they all create this crisis of endurance. It begs the question, how do we hold on? How do we keep our own love from growing cold?
And that's why the promise he gives right after that warning is so powerful. In the middle of all that chaos, all that betrayal, he guarantees the outcome for those who persevere.
But the one who stands firm to the end will be saved.
It's a call to just stick with the mission no matter what it costs.
And perseverance isn't just gritting your teeth, you know. It's active. It's outward focused. Which leads us right to the great promise in verse 14. This is the verse that reshapes how we see everything.
Yes. This is the hope that balances out every single warning. Verse 14 says, "And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come."
What a synthesis. The common narrative is always, you know, increasing darkness, increasing pressure, so we should retreat. But Jesus paints a picture where the darkness increases at the same time that the gospel light is advancing, and it's unstoppable.
God's mission is the guaranteed success story of the last days.
Absolutely. And that phrase, the whole world, it means the whole known inhabited earth. The promise is that before the end comes, the good news will penetrate every corner of global society. It will stand as a testimony to all nations, all people groups.
So this period, the last days, it's not a season for retreat. It's the ultimate season of opportunity.
It is. If the gospel has to reach the whole world before the end, then all the chaos we see is just the backdrop for the church fulfilling the Great Commission.
Our chaos is his opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if Jesus gave us this framework for preparation and hope, not panic, what does this actually look like for us today? Let's move from prophecy to practical action. I see about four key applications here.
I think the first one is the most fundamental. Stay spiritually awake. And this means cultivating an intentional alertness. Not the frantic news cycle kind of alertness, but a consistent spiritual awareness.
Right.
It's about being ready to act, ready to serve, ready to stand firm.
Okay, and the second has to be the counter to that first warning about deception. Stay grounded in truth.
Yes, deception thrives when biblical literacy goes down. The way we fight that is by rooting ourselves deeply in scripture, in prayer, and being an active part of a Christian community that holds us accountable.
The third is so crucial for our mental and emotional health. Don't interpret world events through fear.
We keep coming back to it, but his command, "Do not be alarmed," is a theological mandate. Followers of Christ should be marked by a deep, supernatural calm. Our hope isn't in stable geopolitics. It's in the unshakable sovereignty of Christ.
And that calm, that peace, it should be a witness to a world that is so easily shaken. And the fourth application, it drives us right back to that amazing promise in verse 14.
Stay committed to the mission.
Yes.
If the gospel reaching the whole world is what has to happen before the end, then our focus has to be outward. The last days are not a time for self-preservation. They're the great harvest season. We stand firm in order to advance the kingdom.
So this whole teaching from Matthew 24 is really designed to strengthen our faith, to anchor our hope. It tells us that what looks like chaos is actually the final predictable stage of God's plan playing out.
And every generation of believers has to operate with this same readiness, this courage, and this hope. The core challenge is constant. The days will have turmoil, deception, pressure, spiritual coldness.
But the call isn't to retreat from the world.
No, it's to stand firm, to stay faithful, and to keep relentlessly spreading the gospel until the mission is complete.
We don't surrender to the chaos of the last days. We embrace the opportunity.
We do not panic about the events we see in the headlines.
We prepare, we persevere, and we remain faithful to the Great Commission. And that's the challenging but hopeful thought we want to leave you with today. Are you living with the conviction that this season is your unparalleled opportunity to proclaim the kingdom?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to this deep dive segment of the PWC podcast. We encourage you to visit pwc.pittsfordwesleyanchurch. Join us this Sunday at 11 a.m.